When people tell you those sorts of things, you should revel in that, because it's not the people who are popular and the people who are normal who do great things. It's the people who think differently and think outside the box and aren't afraid to express themselves. Those are the people who are innovators. Those are the people who are the game changers, who make these big differences in the world. And I think that if you're able to revel in that rather than shrink away, that's something that will help to empower you, even if you feel like you're not resilient.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Work in Progress podcast. Today, I'm with my guest, Jamie Cohen. Super excited to have her on the show today. So I'll let her introduce herself.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm Jamie Cohen. I'm the creator of Jambalaya and the Right Words methodology. Just moved to Denver, Colorado, so I'm based there right now. But basically what I do is help people communicate more effectively and use the right words so that they never leave anything open to interpretation.
Wow, I love that. Very interesting. Great name. I love the name. Yeah. I love the concept. We'll definitely dive deep into that later. But, you know, Jamie, this is our second time talking. We hadn't like seen each other because we both create content on LinkedIn. And I was just so fascinated by your story from our first conversation. I knew I definitely wanted to get you on the podcast. So I guess kind of if you could take it back to, you know, even your childhood days, like where did you grow up? Where are you from?
Sure. So I grew up all over the place. I started in New Jersey, moved to Georgia, and then grew up most of my childhood in Iowa and, you know, lived in a smaller town. And it was a sort of place that was always kind of behind the times. Anything that was happening anywhere else in the world usually happened about 5 years later where I grew up. And It's gotten, the mentality is very different now, but when I was living there, it was pretty anti-Semitic. And so I was bullied quite a bit for that. But also I have arthritis. And so, you know, looked a little different, walked a little different as a kid. And through all of that, learned how to be my own advocate, because in any situation I was in, there was never anyone there to stand up for me. There were only people to push me down. So I had to be the one to pick myself back up. So things in my life were just generally pretty unfair. And I think that's sort of what sparked the idea of what I'm doing now, where people come from different environments and they might be, which might be disadvantageous. And you still, in those positions, no matter how bad they are, still have the ability to take the higher road and to not see yourself as a victim. But it's very hard, because I've been preaching that for years. And a couple of years ago, I realized that in my subconscious, I still saw myself as a victim in some ways, and that can really hold you back. And you hear a lot of these motivational speakers talk about, you know, you have to believe in yourself and it's all about you. But you know, when you're bullied every day, or if you're really poor and you're wondering where your next meal is going to come from, it's not just as simple as changing your mind and thinking, well, things could be worse. It's really understanding, getting perspective and providing context. So that's something that I also really focus on now, is providing context to people who don't understand or people who are ignorant, so that you can move throughout the world more easily and more effectively. So Things got better for me in high school. I was an athlete. I was involved in a lot of different organizations, worked with this group called USY, United Synagogue Youth, where I was on the executive board. I was the president of my chapter. And at one of the conventions, all the presidents had to go up and introduce their groups. And so I used to really be into rapping. So I did a rap to introduce my group, which was a chapter of one. And that was me. So I've always sort of been someone who's had a lot of friends, but kind of stands alone. And I've never been part of one group or another, but really have been passionate about diversity. So I've had a wide variety of friends and things that I've been interested in. And when I went to college, that was no different. I had essentially three majors and a minor. I was pre-med. I studied psychology. I studied Spanish and Portuguese language and culture, and then I did a course in universal design, web and web applications. So a very diverse education and seemingly disparate, but all of those things taught me how to be a better communicator. And I think my experience with having been bullied and having been treated pretty poorly also helped with teaching me. I think I've always been an empathetic person, but teaching me how to communicate in a more empathetic way. And so that's something I've been passionate about as well. And after I graduated college, I moved home for a year and wanted to spend some time with my parents before I went off into the world, and was a Spanish interpreter. And that was a crazy experience because I was the only Spanish speaker that was not, that didn't speak Spanish as a first language. And so getting comfortable with the group and getting comfortable translating took a little while. And I remember the first few days that I was there, I was just praying that I would not get paged where I'd have to translate something and then I'd do it incorrectly. But really just throwing yourself into the fire is the best way to get better at something. And it's really just being, and everyone says this, but it's really true, just getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And so as that went along, I got more and more comfortable. And one thing that was very interesting with the translating is that it's impossible to translate directly from one language to another. That's why they call it Spanish interpreting rather than translating, because it's an interpretation of what the person is saying in Spanish and then translating that and interpreting that and presenting that to the doctor in English. So there was this one particular patient that came in, and I like to talk about this story a lot because I think it says a lot about your ability to listen and apply something that doesn't quite make sense to something and turn it into something that does. So she came in, a lot of the patients that I worked with were illiterate or from indigenous areas. So they didn't speak English, but sometimes they didn't really speak Spanish either. And this woman came in and was pointing to her stomach and telling me that she had this smear feeling. And that didn't make any sense to me. The word that she said meant to smear against a wall. I was confused. So I started at the beginning and I said, so what did you eat this morning? How long has this feeling been going on? Is there a certain time of day that you usually get this feeling? And is there a certain time of the month? And so it turns out what she was having were cramps. And just for some reason, that particular word, whether that was slang or just a false cognate from the area in which she lived. And you know, sometimes there's two words that sound exactly the same and have totally different meanings. And so I was able to tell that to the doctor and get her the medication that she needed, and she was on her way. But those sorts of situations are when you really need to be empathetic, because I could have just thought in my head, well, this lady is stupid. She's using a word that doesn't make any sense and that this isn't going to help her at all. But instead thinking, okay, well, she's not, everyone speaks the same language, even when they're speaking the same language, which it sounds a little bit confusing, but everyone interprets and everyone speaks language in their own way. And having that empathy and listening rather than judging really helped me to help her to the best of my abilities. And then after that, I moved to Chicago and I was a competitive salsa dancer and wanted to also pursue comedy. So I was doing that and bartending to support myself. So I was just doing a million different things and sort of fell into marketing. So I was working for a few different companies doing consulting work. And even though they had hired me to do marketing, what I found myself doing was helping them to communicate more effectively. So when they were sending emails to prospects or communicating with clients, I'd see what they were doing and I would make suggestions when they weren't hearing back, saying, well, if you use this word or if you use that word instead of the word you're using, here's what you might get as a response. And that started happening. At the time, you know, I didn't realize that's what I was doing, because I had really been involved in social media. And, you know, the last time we were talking, I was telling you about how I was an influencer on one of the very first social media platforms, which it was called Juicer. It was a social media platform for Jewish teenagers. But there were a lot of kids of all different religions and cultures and ethnic backgrounds on there. And it had the same exact layout as Facebook, except instead of a wall, you left testimonials. So you had friends, you had a profile, you could change the color of your profile. So it was really interesting. And I met within a month, had more connections than anyone on the platform, or I guess friends, because they were called friends also. And because of that, met kids from all over the country and all over the world. And I've sort of been at the forefront of every social media platform that has been developed, but never really knew what to do with it because, you know, I always thought that I was going to be a doctor. And so I didn't have that business mindset of, well, this is something that's happening. How can we monetize this? And I think that's where LinkedIn changed everything, because with Juicer, that came and went, and then MySpace came and went. And then with Facebook, I was one of the first users at my school. I was the first user at my school and then got a few people on the platform. And so when I graduated college, there was a time when liking someone's photo on Facebook was very strange. If you liked someone's photo, people would be like, are you stalking that person? Why are you liking their photo? That's so creepy. And I started putting up content and noticing that I was getting, you know, 5 or 10 likes and then 10 or 20 likes. And then suddenly I was getting, you know, 80 to 100 likes on everything I was posting and realized, hey, there's something here. This is something that I should run with. And then that, you know, mixed with the marketing I was doing and the communication that I was helping with the different clients I was working with, it all sort of coalesced when LinkedIn changed the whole strategy and people began telling stories. And that's sort of where I am right now and the journey that I took to get to where I am.
Jamie, that's amazing. That's an amazing story. Your story is incredible. I think that most times that I ask a guest, you know, the first question, I usually have to like pull from them, like, okay, so what's next and what's next? But I love how you just laid it out like on the table, you know, this is my story. And I think it's very impressive that you were able to overcome so many obstacles to get to where you are now. Definitely some themes that I really want to touch on just because, you know, you present a different story than other people that have been on the podcast so far. So I guess, you know, overcoming struggles of kind of being that outcast, what are some things that helped you when you were, you know, at those low points where you're like, okay, well, I need to move past this. I may not fit in here, but maybe in high school is where I'll kind of catch my stride. Were you always just looking for that new environment to kind of adjust to?
There are two things that changed my life the most. One was swimming. So when I was diagnosed with arthritis, I was told that within a few years I'd be in a wheelchair. And so obviously I was very depressed because I was extremely active. They told me this when I was 9, 10 years old. And my mom said, no, that's not going to happen. And she put me into swimming. And so then from that age on, I was swimming an hour a day and then 2 hours a day. And then into high school, swimming 3 to 4 hours a day. And that gave me a lot of confidence because I was given this horrible prognosis. And then it changed. And still, because it's an autoimmune disease, I got sick quite a bit, but I had strength that made me feel, it gave me confidence because I knew, you know, maybe I'm going to get bullied. Maybe I'm going to get sick. But if something happens, I know that I can protect myself because I have this strength. The second thing was going to summer camp. So the year after my freshman year of high school, I went to summer camp, this camp called Herzl in Wisconsin, and met a bunch of great girls, but two girls in particular who really changed my life. And even though I had been, you know, bullied mercilessly, they told me they thought that I was incredible. And they told everyone at camp how great I was. And then all of a sudden I was someone at camp who everyone was interested in speaking with and everyone is interested in spending time with. And I was, for, you know, a moment here and there, I was the it girl, which was a very strange feeling because I had just been treated so horribly. And another interesting feeling was that all of these kids had known each other since elementary school or preschool even. And I was just this random girl from Iowa coming in to join the ranks. And everyone was so kind and welcoming. And after that, my experience totally changed. I went back to school and I had joined the drumline. So that was something that set me apart. But I also had this new sense of self and new sense of confidence because I had been treated differently all summer. And those, so I think for anyone who's really struggling, you hear a lot of these stories where people say, it gets better. And I was struggling for all these years and I persevered and I was fine. But when you are in the trenches, none of that is helpful. An inspirational speaker, that feels totally contrived because you feel like you're drowning. And what I've really tried to do is to give people actionable steps that they can take to change their life. And one of those things, especially for kids in middle school, something that I suggest is if you're seeing the same thing happen to you again and again, if people are treating you in a certain way, there's a big chance that there are prejudices at play. But also, if you're in a lot of different environments and experiencing the same thing, it might be you. And it doesn't mean that you're a bad person, and it doesn't mean that you need to change yourself, but you need to look around and see, how are people communicating with one another? What can I do to change the way that I'm speaking so that they can understand where I'm coming from, but I'm not changing my moral compass. I'm not changing my hobbies and interests. I'm just reaching out to them in a way they can understand. And that, I mean, I could go into that for hours. That's a whole other story, but that checking yourself is a really important thing because especially kids who are bullied, they'll tell their parents and their parents will say, no, it's not you, it's them. And people will learn to love you. But if you take accountability of yourself at a young age and you see, okay, things are going to get better, but I'm going to be the person that makes things better. I'm not going to wait for that to happen. That makes things a lot easier. And if you can get involved in an organization that's outside the hierarchy of the popularity at your school, that can also really empower you because then your confidence doesn't come from those people that you see in the halls every day. It comes from within because you know no matter where you go, you're accountable for yourself and how you feel about yourself and who you are is not determined by the people at school.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's very true. So were you always like this resilient from an early age? Did you feel like, you know, at one point was it maybe your parents like instilling this type of resilience in you? Because that's something that I can imagine is pretty tough, you know, being judged. And I definitely want to touch on this later on, like your adoption of social media, because for kids nowadays, social media can be like kind of that source of bullying or negative comments. So I guess for you, where did you, I guess, find that resilience in those early years?
I think so. As a kid, I didn't really have a lot of resilience because if I had, I don't think I would have been bullied as much. And I think what I did see is that when I had trouble making friends, largely it was there was a lot of prejudice, but I also took a look at the kids who were popular and saw the way that they were interacting with one another and how they spoke to each other. And granted, they gossiped quite a bit, and I've never liked gossip. That's something that I've never been interested in and never enjoyed. So that wasn't something that I adopted, but just the way they spoke to each other, I really spent a lot of time studying that. And then by the time I went to camp and I had my first year of high school, I was able to fit in a lot better and still be the person I was. But one thing that I will say is that I've always been an individual. And because of that, my friends and just kids in school would always tell me, you're weird, but you're like the good kind of weird. And when you're a kid, that hurts. Because all you want is to fit in. You know, I had this crazy curly hair and people told me that I had a Jewish nose and when I was in high school. But when people tell you those sorts of things, you should revel in that because it's not the people who are popular and the people who are normal who do great things. It's the people who think differently and think outside the box and aren't afraid to express themselves. Those are the people who are innovators. Those are the people who are the game changers who make these big differences in the world. And I think that if you're able to revel in that rather than shrink away, that's something that will help to empower you, even if you feel like you're not resilient.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because, yeah, you do have to be different to achieve things that are outside of the box and, you know, not normal, like day to day. I think even you and your journey in entrepreneurship, you know, it's something that is becoming more, I guess we're seeing more and more of, but for the most part, you know, most people do have a 9-to-5. So even just being able to do something like that shows that you're able to just find your own position, your own value proposition, and then execute on that on your own as an individual. So at what point did you decide to start up this, you know, your service for helping people communicate more effectively, build those online brands and personalities?
So I've had my business on the side for about 7.5 years, and it's been through many iterations. And I think it really started to change around this time last year, maybe in September or October this time last year. And I saw things changing on LinkedIn, and instead of people just posting articles they had seen somewhere, they started sharing stories. And I know Michaela Alexis will not take credit, but she really did change the game on LinkedIn. She started telling stories about her life, talking about her trials and tribulations, but also giving actionable advice, or providing great advice that had actionable steps that you could take to get out of your situation. And so then I started seeing her stories, and then I started seeing Manu, well, I guess he goes by Swish now, Swish Goswami, talking about different things he was going through. And I was just thinking, like, wow, this kid is so young, but so empowered. And, you know, he's just able to hold his own through his stories. And so then I saw a few other people starting to share stories, and I was in an environment where I was discriminated against and I didn't love what I was doing, and I desperately wanted to get out, but I didn't know how. So I started getting engaged on LinkedIn and telling. I remember the first storytelling post that I posted was about this homeless man that stood on the corner on one of the cross streets that I drove by on my way home every day. And he was always smiling, and he was carrying this cowboy boot. And he would hold out the cowboy boot and, you know, be asking for donations. And so he, for all intents and purposes, was branding himself. And usually the light was green, so I wasn't able to stop and donate. But one day the light was red, and I opened my window and I handed him $1. And he says, "I see you every single day, and it's so nice to meet you in person. God bless you. Thank you so much." And was just so grateful. And that feeling, that the fact that he was so grateful and so kind given his situation, was beautiful. But also, when you think about that from a branding and sales perspective, the way he made me feel in that moment made me think about him. And so anytime that light was red and anytime I had cash on me, I would give it to him. And I remembered the smile, the hair, what he'd said, and his cowboy boot. And so I wrote about that, and I said, you know, it's all in the way you communicate yourself. It's all in the way you brand yourself. Make people, that all those things will make you memorable and make people remember you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's so true. So it's great to see, like, you know, you've had the business on the side now, and now it's kind of your full-time thing. So what are you doing now? What does the future look like for you? And what kind of services are you offering to people that can help them better communicate?
So that's what's been so exciting about LinkedIn, is it's constantly evolving. So I created a new program recently. I'm going through a rebrand right now. And the program is called The Right Words. So I'm helping individuals and organizations communicate more effectively by teaching them how to use the right words in a variety of situations so that they never leave anything open to interpretation. So there are a few different, I mean, this can really apply to any situation, which is why I've enjoyed it so much, because I've gotten to work with so many different types of people. So one thing that hasn't changed is, while I'm not focusing so much on marketing per se, I still am doing a lot of branding and messaging, which is part of marketing. And so I'm working with a few different companies on creating a message that resonates, but creating a message that's also consistent. consistency is key to proper branding and to creating a presence, but then also having authentic messaging is something that is part of that too. And it's not as easy as it seems, because with everything in the world at our fingertips now, because of the prolificness, I don't even know if that's a word, of the internet, you can have anything that you want at any time. And so your interests, or our interests now, I'm sure, are far more diverse than any other generation that's ever existed. So if you think of yourself as the CEO of a multi-billion dollar company, when someone asks you, what do? If you just say you're the CEO of this company, that's boring and that ends the conversation immediately. But then you trip yourself up because you're like, well, but I'm the CEO of this company. I don't know how else to describe myself. But then let's say you're the CEO of Nike. So you are the CEO of this brand that everyone in the world knows about. And not only do you focus on making great shoes and great activewear, but you're building a community. You're building a brand that's focused around a community of go-getters. And they're, you know, they have the Just Do It. They're pushing people to get off their butts and take action. And their action happens to be in sports, but they're able to apply that to a lot of different areas. So then let's say the CEO of Nike is at some event and someone says, oh, what do you do? If he says, oh, I'm the CEO of Nike, then someone will say, oh, wow, that's so interesting. What's that like? And then the conversation is all about him or her, instead of the person that they're communicating with. And that is the most important person in the conversation. So instead, if he or she says, oh, you know, I'm the CEO of Nike, but what I do is X, Y, and Z. You know, I'm really passionate about the arts. I'm involved in a lot of different nonprofits. And recently, I've been really interested in this particular thing, which is helping these particular types of people do this other particular thing. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. And then the person might say, oh, well, that's so interesting. I do X, Y, and Z. That's also like something that you're doing. And because you've given this person so many things to attach onto, they will find something in there that resonates with them. And then as soon as they switch it to them, if you're able to change the focus so it's all about them, that person will remember you. They'll say, wow, I met this guy or gal who was the CEO of Nike. Can you believe it? The CEO of Nike. And they were just so down to earth and they made me feel so great. And we talked about science. We talked about basketball. And, you know, I feel so great after this conversation. And then when they go to the store and they're like, geez, I need a new pair of shoes for my kids. I want to surprise them. And they see that there are some shoes on sale and there's like Nikes, Adidas, and Reeboks. And the Nikes are the most expensive. They're probably subconsciously going to want to choose the Nikes. You are making them feel good in a moment and then showing them what your community is like and inviting them into that community. And so that's sort of the focus that I've taken for, you know, the branding side. Another thing that I'm doing related to branding, but more communication, is the personal branding. So like I said, with this CEO, it's probably difficult to explain exactly what they do. And so an exercise I have them do is write out all of their interests, all what their family's like, their education, at different experiences that were really meaningful to them. Write that all out. And once you see all of that, you will find patterns in every single thing you've done almost without fail. And that is how you start building your personal brand. So then once you have that under your belt, a big part of personal branding is the support of your community. So it's important, no matter how famous you are, no matter how high up you are within a company, to have strong relationships with your, and well, since we're talking about the company, we'll just say employees. So if that means just stopping in the break room to say hi to different people, learning their names, stopping by someone's desk, if you see that they did something that that helped make a project move more smoothly, like, hey, Carrie, I saw that you were a huge part of this campaign. Thanks so much. You mean a lot to us. And we're glad to have you here. But then following up with that, so it doesn't just feel like you're saying something for that moment. So you're building these employee relationships. And of course, you have thousands of employees in a company. It's impossible to remember everyone's name and have a relationship with everyone, but you can be present and you can be this authentic person. So then when you go to build your personal brand, that will be corroborated by your employees, by your company. And that makes it even stronger, because if you create this beautiful, amazing personal brand with a great color scheme and great messaging, but you don't have the relationships with your employees, it's not going to do very well, because your employees will see it and say, well, this is a great story, but she's not like that in person. But if you've taken time to build those relationships and then they see that, they're like, wow, this is, I am going to like this. I'm going to share this because she makes working at this company so much better. So that's something, and this can be applied to way smaller companies. If you have a company of 100 people or even 20 people, that same sort of community building is even more important. Having individual relationships with all of those people becomes more important. So that's another facet. And then I really like to help people with conflict resolution. So giving them the right words to mitigate tension and conflict and provide context so that people are communicating more effectively and happier, because conflict and confusion usually arise from lack of context. So you'll always hear people are afraid of what they don't understand. But if you provide context, it makes it almost impossible for someone not to understand. And then another thing that I do in so far as communication is I help people interview more effectively and negotiate their salaries. And there, of course, there is a disparity in the pay amongst men and women. And that has to do with some, longstanding prejudices, but also largely women don't women don't negotiate their salary generally. And so I've been working with a lot of women to help them start the interview process in a way that they have authority and they're creating a relationship, rather than just providing canned responses and answering in a way that they think the interviewer wants them to answer. I just learned this recently, people of color generally don't negotiate their salaries as much as their white counterparts, which I think is a tragedy, because as we all can clearly tell, the color of your skin has nothing to do with your effectiveness as an individual or an employee. So I've been working with a lot of individuals of color to help them gain the confidence in asking for what they want. And that's been so beautiful and empowering. And one of my clients is under 30, a female and woman of color. And after working together, she was offered $40,000 more than she was currently making. And then we negotiated that up $10,000. And then her company counteroffered with even more money, but because she was looking for a new opportunity, she turned that down. But it just goes to show you that you are so valuable, and you won't realize your value until you ask for what you deserve. So that's a lot of different things that we've just spoken about, but basically branding and messaging. So helping you communicate your brand and your message more effectively, helping executives create stronger relationships with their employees, going in and doing workshops about communication practices and conflict resolution within the company. So building those strong relationships so that you can build a strong personal brand, and then working with people to help them negotiate, to mitigate conflict, and then of course the interviewing and salary negotiation. But as I said, this can be really applied to so many different things. Anywhere where communication is important is a place where I'll be able to help you become a more effective and stronger communicator.
Awesome. Well, I will definitely have your social media handles as well as website links like that in the show notes below. So people can definitely check that out if they're interested in getting in touch with you, learning more about your story, as well as seeing, maybe they want to use some of these effective communication styles in their workplace as well as personal life. So thank you so much, Jamie, for coming on, telling your story, and just educating everyone on the importance of effective communication.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Tiffany.